said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire.
Just the greatest producer in the world, Tyler T. Mill.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
It is 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. Luckily for you, old Dirty Show and T. Mill, a.k.a. Psycho T, a.k.a. Moneybags. And I need to check. Did we get... Damn it!
Not a successful night, but we're okay and still looking at a very real possibility to finish the entire week in the green. We're good. We're good. Don't panic.
Yep.
Wasn't an over, but it wasn't a successful night.
Just in the red. In the red today. Yesterday, but it wasn't an over, as you said. Two out of five, so that's all right. But we'll see if we can get back on track to end the week. Mm-hmm. And stay in the green for the week. But be ready for that. T-Mill's best bets coming up in the last segment of the show.
You going later Correa on this over hour. Bases?
Ooh.
I haven't put it together yet.
You ain't got no cojones if you don't.
Well, I also don't know if they'll list it. A lot of times right after a trade, player props kind of go away for a bit.
Oh, okay.
I'd go Sanchez.
You're scared, Clint. Shut up.
But we'll get to that a little bit later on. But training camp, it was the eighth practice. They were off yesterday, and they came back today. And Clint, as we talked about it, the defense kind of carried the way and won again, as they have done throughout camp. And I guess my thought is this defense, we believe, is going to be really, really good. And they have looked dominant. I mean, dominant, and baby – you know I love it. They dominate with a swagger, right? We got C.J. Gardner-Johnson up there talking about belts to asses and continuing to do that dance, and nobody is stopping them. So they keep doing that dance. You hear it and see it, see the talk. And I heard today was reported that he walked past the media after they had whooped the offense's ass again and said to everybody, I'm going to have 20 TFLs this year the way we are we are crashing gaps. So they are very, very confident. The secondary is very, very good. Another two interceptions today, Kamari Lassiter and Jalen Smith. Kamari Lassiter got C.J. Stroud in 7-on-7. But my thought to you, Clint, do you believe that this defense is really this dominant and they would be doing this to most teams if they were in camp with their offense? Or do you get a sense that some of this is a really good defense that's in year three of its system taking advantage of a team offensively that is just getting started?
Yeah, look, I think that this defense is just that damn good. I think it's an extremely talented defense, number one. Number two, typically you have a really good defense. It's either driven by the secondary or driven by the rush. And the other part benefits from the dominant one. With this defense, not only are they talented across the board, great roster, great defensive roster, but you've got a great pass rush and you've got the ability to be a great man-to-man cover team in the secondary. You've got the ability in the secondary to suffocate offenses and force the quarterback to hold the ball so the pass rush can get there. The pass rush has the ability to be so good, the ball has to come out quick so the secondary can sit on routes and get turnovers that way. So it's not just talented, and it's not just one unit that's driving the other. It can be driven. They can stop mid-game at halftime and decide they want to let their secondary drive the pressure or drive the tempo of the game. So this is a rare – to me, it's a rare combination on this defense – of secondary and pass rush, and that is going to be hard to deal with for anybody and everybody that they bump up against. And so I would say, now look, there's some truth to the other side as well, that there's some issues because this is a young developing offense, but I can't minimize what this defense is doing simply because we've got a new offensive coordinator in Houston. This defense is that damn good.
Yeah, I think the thing that you can really look at the way they've built this, and I think you were kind of getting to this point, they've got a lot of different ways to control things and to beat you, right? They've got, as you said, they can do a lot of different things in coverage with the versatility they have with certain guys that can be safeties, that can be nickels, that can be corners, and they've got a lot of different pass rushers. They have several guys that you feel comfortable, Clint, to come off the edge that you can then push Will and Daniil inside for matchups, because they've got guys like Denico Autry and Barnett that can rush the passer from the outside, and that guy you're starting to really like, 52, Daryl
Taylor,
that can come off the outside edge as well. I know Kick Rocks was on him early. Shout out to him. But they just got a lot of different things. To me, really the only thing in which you see, and we saw it last year with Baltimore, really, really comes to mind, is if they just start running it down the Texans' throat, up the gut. And I still think they even have some answers there where it shouldn't get out of control. So I know this offense is struggling, but they have a lot of different pieces and a lot of different answers to what can be thrown at them.
Yeah, they D'Amico Ryan's playbook is wide open.
Yep.
You want to play coverage this game? Cool, we can do any of it. You want to play man and do some things creatively with the box players so that you can get an extra hat in the box to stop the run? Cool, we can do that too. You want to bring the two safeties down and really take some risk and still have some zone concepts, but let our safeties kind of be involved in the run because you're playing Derrick Henry or you end up playing Saquon Barkley, fingers crossed, at some point in time. You know, or it's just a run. Teams getting busy in a run game. D'Amico's got, I mean, literally, he's got as many weapons. If the Texans are healthy,
yeah,
D'Amico Ryans has as many weapons to deploy as any defense in football.
Yep, absolutely. So they will practice this weekend, and they will head to West Virginia. By the way, Sean Pendergast will be there live. And you will hear from him not only on his show, but he will take stops on In the Loop. He'll take stops with us on The Drive as well to give us updates on what he is seeing live right there at camp. So they're going to do a little changeup, coming from Houston going up to West Virginia. So it should be a fun thing for the Texans coming up.
Pendergast and Payne.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, Clint, tonight is a big night. Roster moves were made to start things, and the big things that you need to know and want to know is Jeremy Pena has been reinstated from the injured list. He is back. He is back in the lineup. We will give you that lineup here momentarily. But Pena is back after being off with that rib injury. He hit that home run in Sugar Land, and we talked about it yesterday, saying that's enough. He's had two games. Two rehab games, and he has done what he needed to do, and they bring him up. Correa and Sanchez and Ramon Urias, they are all three on the big league club, obviously, as they made those trades yesterday, which means their top prospect, Bryce Matthews, and outfielder Jacob Melton, not Taylor Trammell. Jacob Melton and Bryce Matthews have been optioned to AAA Sugar Land. Nick Hernandez has been recalled to AAA with the absence of Ryan Gusto. Zach Short has also been DFA'd, so good luck to him wherever he is rolling. But those are the roster moves, the big ones. Those three they made trades for are all active and ready to go, and Jeremy Pena is back, Clint. And this is a big game, right? They are trying to increase their lead or hold their five-game lead on two teams that made a lot of deals at the deadline with Seattle and Texas, and they're on the road against another team that's trying to get into the playoffs, the Boston Red Sox, and Hunter Brown gets the ball today, Clint. Here is the lineup. Jeremy Pena will lead off for the first time since his injury. Altuve's behind him as the DH. Jesus Sanchez, he is the new left-handed bat they wanted in the lineup. He is batting third. And Correa, he makes his return in the cleanup spot at third base. Right behind him, the hot-hitting Yiner Diaz, he's catching tonight. Batting fifth, Christian Walker is at first base. Taylor Trammell stays on the roster. He's in center field right now as Jake Myers is still healing up. By the way, does anybody know, when was the last time we got an update on Jake and Jordan? Anybody know where the hell they are?
I ain't heard nothing.
Nothing. And then kind of a surprise here, but Cam Smith, he drops to the 8-hole in right field. and then Mauricio Dubon's at second base tonight. That is the lineup with Hunter Brown on the mound. Your thoughts, Clint, about everything that's happening in the lineup they put forth?
Excited, man. Excited to see, the Astros lineup with Pena back at the top. I mean, I think that spark right there is an absolute game changer. When you've got to see him four or five times a game and he doesn't need to, you know, hit a ball in the gap to end up at second base. He can dribble one to third and get there and steal second and be in scoring position within two pitches. That is a game changer at the top of the lineup. And then, obviously, Correa, man. I don't know that I've looked forward to seeing, a regular season game and regular season at-bats and a guy switch from short to third and kind of just see what it looks like again in an Astros uniform. I guess this situation hadn't come about much, if ever, with the Astros, but super excited about Correa obviously being an Astro and seeing him. And then look, if this Sanchez kid is a guy that you, and I know there's a left-handed bat at play there, we kid about that, but if he's a guy that you feel strongly enough about plugging his ass in a three hole, like you said, above Correa, above Diaz, who's been hot. If that's where you're at with him, then hell, I'm amped to see him as well. And then, look, you mentioned Hunter Brown's on the bump. I mean, one thing down the stretch, we've talked about a lot of these. Boy, we didn't get a pitcher who's injured, who's coming back. What about these bats? This, that. Astros are going to be in a rough spot if Hunter Brown doesn't right this ship, man. His last few outings since, what was it, the one was it one or two before the All-Star break? I think it was two before the All-Star break, and then the one on the immediately coming out of the All-Star break. They were rough. I say rough because he was literally pitching at a Cy Young level. So, I mean, it's all relative here, but he's got to get back.
His last one wasn't bad numbers-wise, 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned, but he's got 98 pitches in 5 innings, and he couldn't go any further, end up losing the game.
Yeah, but that Ron, that's one of those,
of it.
That's one of those things, though, like, look, I'm not poo-pooing the outing. I'm just simply saying, like, for Hunter Brown, like, if he goes out there and keeps the earned runs down and pitches, quote-unquote, a good game, I mean, there should be a consideration of it. He's going six and he might get into seven.
Yeah.
Right? Like his stuff and the way he typically pitches, the command that he has, if he's on, I mean, there ain't going to be no five-inning deal. He's flirting with seven potentially. So, hopefully he can get back to that.
Yeah, like you're saying, it was a Cy Young conversation, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's where I was going to go, Clint, is yes, there is excitement, and I think the number one thing people are waiting to see is Carlos Correa get back in the box, and really to see Sanchez, to see what the new guys do. But obviously Correa takes center stage with him returning, but the most important thing is Hunter Brown getting back on track. That's the most important thing. Even with Pena returning, even with Correa coming back, the most important thing is Hunter Brown. What does he get back to Cy Young? Not good, because he wasn't pitching at he's a good starter. He wasn't pitching at that. He was pitching at a Cy Young pace, and that's what both of your starters, Framber and him, are pitching like. And this team needs him to get back to that level.
No question about it. Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That is the latest there as they get going in Boston here coming up in less than an hour. And it'll be good to see. Weird to see Carlos at third base, but it'll be refreshing to see the new blood there.
Boston.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, fellas, the big story coming out of the NFL is, well, the situation in Dallas. And it has gotten going from bad to absolute the worst, potentially the worst could happen, because Micah Parsons, who they've been engaged in negotiations for a while, and he wants a new contract, and it's the time, and we're starting to see all of the other edge rushers get deals, most recently TJ Watt, who reset the market over others before, and it seems like the numbers are there, but they can't seem to come to a deal, and now we've reached a point where Micah Parsons has gone to social media and expressed wanting to be traded. And now this is going to a whole nother level. This is different than Dak or CeeDee Lamb or any of some of the other guys that Jerry and Stephen Jones have had some contracts disputes with, or at least taken a longer time with. This is to the next level. He is now expressing that he wants to be traded, and now it'll be a wonder how this thing actually ends up.
I think it is going to be a wonder how it ends up. I think Micah Parsons is just crazy enough to force the issue. I think Jerry is definitely, I think both of them have taken it personal, and I think Jerry's just crazy enough to keep this thing alive. I do. It wouldn't surprise me at all if this weren't just a media ploy, and Jerry is going to steal as much free advertising as he possibly can here over the next couple of weeks until it's go time. Once again, it shouldn't surprise anybody. I know this is you can argue Micah Parsons is better than any of the other players that he's pulled it with, but this is just same song and dance, different day for Jerry. I mean, it's just – I do think that you made a point earlier about this being personal. I do agree with you there. I think this one appears to be a little bit more personal on both ends than the Dak Prescott or even the CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah. Are you surprised – now, obviously, that Parsons is taking this stance. Are you surprised that he has just decided to go to camp and that he has been there every day?
No, because I think deep down, I think he's a kid that wants to play ball. I think yeah. He wants to do right. I don't think he has anything better to do than to be around his teammates, kind of deal. I think he eats up working out and playing the game, and so I think he literally wants to be out there, and he's afraid he's going to miss something. That part doesn't. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't get bad enough to where he bounced and said, I'm going to Cabo for a few days. That wouldn't surprise me one bit. But the whole thing, though, Ron, is just it's why Dallas, you know, at the end of the day, it's been 35 years since anybody's, like, considered him a serious, serious contender for a Super Bowl. I mean, you got – because the most recent thing is CeeDee Lamb. I don't know if you've seen CeeDee Lamb's comments on social media about it, but I mean, it's you have got your star defensive player requesting a trade. Yep. You've got your star wide receiver that you just paid a boatload of money with, that likes to shoot music videos after losing on Monday night. You've got him commenting on social media now about, come on, man, pay the guy the money that you owe him. Like, the whole thing is just, you're fighting in training camp so much that literally the coach stops practice and has you running gassers. Right? I mean, he's had to reprimand the team multiple times in training camp because they're fighting. I mean, it's just it's typical.
Yeah. No, it's a crazy situation. I don't think Parsons is going anywhere. I think they get this done, but I do think it's not going to be just hugs and, all right, man, hey, man, that was business. I think there will be some things that are remembered in it, and that relationship may in some way not be the same that it was prior to this these negotiations. All right, coming up as we continue here on a Friday, there's something we've been watching with the Texans, and I would say the word I would use in which I am in is panicked. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Hughley has came in the game.
Texans Training Camp, live from the Mokerum Injury Lawyers Studio. Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Little update there, fellas. Text Courtney, text the wife. No clue.
This is so good.
She had no clue. Never heard of that in life, was her response. Canadian tuxedo. She's shopping it to her friends.
The way you told me, she said it was freaking hilarious.
No. Nope. Never heard of it.
I've only met your wife once, but I can just, like, for some reason imagine her like, oh.
Never in life heard of that. And then it followed up when I explained to her exactly what it is. Never in life heard of that. It's a new one. That damn denim on denim ain't just denim on denim, baby. That's a name for it. Name for the damn thing. Shout out to that. All right, coming up here in a little bit, you'll get T-Mill's Best Bets next segment, and you'll get to hear from Carlos Correa as he speaks to the media for the first time as newly this time, this go-around, as a Houston Astro. But Nick Caley spoke today a little bit, and he spoke about a few things about his offense, but in specific, he spoke about just kind of the bodies and all the things around C.J. Stroud that he's kind of dealt with today and throughout training camp as they've tried to do things within the passing game. Here's Nick Caley talking about some of the obstacles for C.J. Stroud today.
I mean, I think it's everything. I think it's timing. I think it's, you know, being a little, you know, anchoring a little bit more at times in the protection piece of it, being able to play more on time, you know, got to do a better job myself, maybe getting some more quick options there early on too. I think it's collectively, it's everything. It's not just one person. It's never just one person or one facet. Just think we got to continue to all evolve and get better, you know, collectively.
Real quick, Clint, I know there was a piece in there that you loved that maybe bordered upon football horny. What's your thoughts right now in terms of Nick's ability to get you there? I mean, Bobby Slowick, now he could
Bobby could do
football.
It now.
Oh, he would football horny you every
week.
Did you
see Tyreek Hill crediting him with learning this Miami offense that he's been in 3 years?
He said he didn't get it for 3 years.
Didn't get it for 3 years. Bobby Slowick saved the day.
Dang it, Bobby. That's exactly what we don't want.
Yeah, look, all of this stuff starts, you know, all of this stuff starts with the ability, I think, to communicate, you know, what they're doing on the field or what their expectations are. And I think Nick Caley is a very good communicator. And, now, again, whether he's a good play caller or not, we'll see. I mean, we're going to see any of this until rubber meets the road on a Sunday afternoon when it matters. But, I love the way that he appears to be transparent and talk the game. And the audio you just played in particular, I've said it a million times. I think it's winning offensive football. I think it's the best version of C.J. Stroud that we've seen and that we will see. And I think it's the way you win on the offensive side. And you gotta play on time. You gotta get the football out of your hands and protect the offensive line. The more the quarterback goes out there, and even if the coverage dictates that you hold the football and throw it down the field, the more you do that, the more difficult it's gonna be on the offensive line, and the more errors they're gonna make, and the more hits the quarterback's gonna take. They got to play on time. Right? I think what that piece of audio right there, Ron. In just a short amount of time, Nick Caley talked about anchoring down, right? And in other words, is C.J. Stroud getting to his drop point? Is he moving in the pocket, staying anchored, keeping his cleats in the turf, keeping his eyes down the field, and being able to navigate the chaos and deliver the football down the field? He's got to be able to do that. You asked the question last week of, how much did the previous year, how much of a toll did it take on C.J. Stroud? Mm-hmm. And is he, quote-unquote, seeing ghosts? You didn't say that. I'm just using that. Is he seeing things? Is he struggling handling the pressure? Is he bailing the pocket too early? That's a very real question, right? So when I hear the offensive coordinator talking about anchoring down, you got to anchor down. I mean, that's if that's being communicated to C.J. Stroud, it's absolutely beautiful. Play the game on time, right? If that's what the offensive coordinator is telling C.J. Stroud, it's absolutely beautiful. Right, if it's not there, don't wait on it. Get the ball out. It helps everybody. And then the offensive coordinator's talking about, you know what? Maybe I didn't give him enough quick opportunities today. Again, exactly what I want my offensive coordinator saying at this point in camp. Now, I don't like the reason he's saying it. I don't like the question that he's answering. Right? Too much chaos around the quarterback's feet. Too much pressure on the quarterback. Offensive line's not holding up. Like, I don't like the reason why he's saying what he's saying, but I do love the messaging that's coming out of the offense coordinator's mouth.
Like I said to you, man, I've been holding this a little bit. I'm panicked. And I know it's early. And if you want to express that or you completely disagree with what I'm saying, I think it's fair. But I can't help it. I can't help when we're reading, watching, seeing what we're seeing every day. I am greatly concerned about the offensive line and how much they are going to potentially handcuff Nick Nick Cayley and C.J. Stroud and this offense. Like I said, man, Nico Collins is the truth. He's a top 10 receiver in this league. It's legit. I think Christian Kirk is one of the best slots in the league, and we're already seeing it. By the way, hell of a battle between him and Jalen Petrie today. Higgins, we talked about it earlier this week. There seems to be a potential role for him to make some plays. Noel, there seems to be a role for him to make some plays. Brevin Jordan, if he can stay healthy, there looks to be a role. Dalton Schultz, I like the potential. Joe Mixon healthy and Nick Chubb. I like the potential of the skills and what they could bring to the table. But I am very, very concerned about that offensive line. I just
you went very, very, huh?
I'm panicked. Let me take it to the step forward. Multiple varies and panicked. And
I remember Show Mama, don't you?
I'm not gonna lie to you. It's
I don't remember her.
It was
worrying ass.
Yeah, I am.
No, seriousness, dude.
That's fine.
I am.
Like, I'm not just talking to you, of anybody, because I'm certain there are people who are driving around saying, God, you know, whatever you're saying. But from the jump, I was skeptical of what they decided to go and how they decided to attack this big issue. And, yeah, Clint, I knew it might be a slow start, but damn. They've practiced 8 days. It's not that they have just struggled.
Oh, no.
It's not that they have, you know, gotten the best of them. They've got their ass kicked 7 of the 8 days.
Ooh.
Right? There ain't blitzing. There ain't no stunts. They ain't doing any of that.
Yeah.
They're just whooping their ass straight up. And so, Clint, I just, like, when you think about it, it's the biggest person of upside that I like is the rookie, Ursary. But I Titus may be playing out of position. You got a 6th round center. Could he be Jason Kelce, who was also drafted in the 6th round? I guess probably not. And then you got Andrews, who New England was good on, right? And Lakin Tomlinson, who was a cheap addition that didn't grade high, and Cam Robinson, who didn't grade high, especially in pass protection. And now we've walked out here and watched him. And you have come in here multiple times. It was an ass kicking. It wasn't good. It was bad. Worse than that. I know it's early, and they should have time to grow and get better. But this is they've given me no reason to believe that this thing is going to get fixed and allow C.J. Stroud to be what I believe the great player he can be.
Well, I'll give you two things. I think for me. Because you're not wrong. I mean, you're not wrong, and I'm just not on that level yet. No, there's two things for me. Number one, what I've watched in training camp, yes, there's been a lot of pressure, but I see a pocket that's collapsing from the edges. That's what I see consistently, right? That is different than what we saw last year. Last year, it was the inside guard, center guard pressure that concerned me the most. If you listen to this show, you know that. That's the inability to handle a TN stunt was wild by the guards in the center, right? And so that's not what we're seeing right now. We are seeing some tackles that are struggling, put on islands versus two of the top 10, top 8, top 6 maybe edge rushers in the game, and they're struggling, no doubt about it. Got to get fixed. I'm not minimizing it, but it just clarifying that. That doesn't concern me as much as just the chaos that was, right? Yeah. So that, number one. Number two, I am leaning heavily into, Ron, if Nick Cayley can't fix, let's say, and I say fix is a strong word. If he can't improve the quarterback's communication, the quarterback playing on schedule, the offensive line handling some little stunts and their ability to communicate where the hell they need to go. If he can't improve the run game, if he can't improve the tight end play and how they're used in this offense, and if he can't move Nico Collins around, after telling us to exhaustion about how get my best players to play to their strengths, right? If he can't get Nico Collins moved around, if he has to, get Nico Collins moved around and get him the ball in creative ways. Like, if he just does three of those things at an average level, the protection's going to be significantly better. So I'm leaning more into
the stuff outside of the five up front.
Not just that, because I think it starts with what you're talking about. And yes, but I mean, you know, if he can't just getting this protection to an acceptable level should not be difficult. And if Nick Caley can't do that, then boy, D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, they struck again. They struck out again. You know, I mean, it is. There's so many angles to approach and so many places to where you can get just a tad bit better that this. So I say all that to say that's why I'm not concerned about what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah. I don't think that they will not. I think they potentially will make better adjustments and quicker adjustments that were made from last year. I agree with that if it comes down to it. But I also think those adjustments will then be, all right, we just have to work around that deficiency. And to me, working around that deficiency limits things, limits you to do all the things, like things that you want to do, and limits what CJ Stroud and the weapons are capable of doing, because you have to work around your potential deficiency with the offensive line. And I know you've said there's quick game and there's ways you can do it that are really, really effective. But in my mind, I think at some point it's about to be, all right, we know what they're going to do. They can't hold up in our pass rush for long. So we're going to choke down on these guys, and we're going to play everything within 10, 15 yards of the line of scrimmage. And we are, as a word you would use, suffocate this offense and just force them to get out of throwing it quick. And that to me, I think, then eats into the hands if this O-line continues to play the way they have looked. Because in practice, Clint, that's what's happened. The Texans, who have a great defense, they are jumping these routes. They are playing tighter, and it is becoming an issue. So that even when they make adjustments, I just think they're throwing handcuffs on these guys, and I hate to see it, because I really do think there's great potential with their outside guys and their running back and their skilled guys to be able to be really effective. We'll look at the rotation and T-Mill's best bets coming up next.
It's Texans Training Camp, live from the Mokerum Injury Lawyer Studio. Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, text line, good conversation coming through. I also think that several offensive lines throughout the league would struggle on the outside with this defense. If our defense was weak, I'd be a lot more concerned. That's fair. Fair for you. I do take that into account, that they are going up against a really, really good defense. Tell you something, boss. There's a lot of good defensive lines and a lot of good coordinators that can get pressure, including week one against the Rams.
Can only be one number one defense, though.
You're right. Sure.
Why are you being sarcastic?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, man.
I wasn't trying to be rude to you, buddy.
I'm just saying, yeah, they're, you're right.
Okay.
The number three might be able to get them. I'm telling you, Tyler, I swear to God, I am petrified for C.J. Stroud and this offense for third and eight. Everybody in the building knows you got to throw it. I am right now today. I am. What did I give you? Two varies. I am very, very concerned.
Yeah, we got to stay out in third and eights.
I'm not saying it's great for anybody.
We got to do better on first and second down, Chief.
Yeah, I'm just saying third, seven, third and eight. There's some teams, Clint, third and eight. You feel like they got a pretty good shot to pick it up. They can go and pick it up. Can a guy get open? Third and eight. I'm thinking, boy, can he not get hit? Is what I'm thinking. So, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully, I can come back here, and Lord knows I'm a I am a man that is not afraid to admit when he is wrong. I've clearly does not happen often, but not afraid to admit when he is wrong. And I will gladly come up here and say, guys, yep, you're right. I panicked. It was way too early. Didn't let them get their feet wet. Didn't let them get the system known and everything. Didn't let them do that. I will gladly come up through here.
Is that my boy Ron?
If this O-line isn't a problem. All right, one thing that is not a problem is what you got coming up behind us today, and that is Texans All Access, baby. And John Harris and Mark Vandermeer will have things rolling for you, so stay tuned for them as they come up right as we get finished here on a Friday. And Area 45 back in action. They will have post-game. They will have conversations, I'm sure, as they did last night, about Correa and where he has fallen in the lineup, and about the Texans getting back.
And Weaves going. Getting snatched off people's heads.
Well, let's stay away from that.
That was electric.
It was. That was you know when you start hitting the lines of, this is serious talk. Hey, man, you ain't got to yell at me. At that point, you know what, that's a, we're in a different conversation here.
Santiago was a bit pissed.
he came out of his take. Said, you ain't got to,
I need Creighton Santiago round three,
first
man.
First, no, you do not. No, I do not have to sit here. Anyhow, but Area 45, Bajani, Creighton, and Santiago, man, it's an entertaining show.
Shout out Santiago.
7 to 11, as I said, they will have the post game, hopefully, with Correa, Hunter Brown, and crew getting the dub against the Red Sox. That's coming up behind the guys in Texans All Access. And T Mills trying to end on a good note, baby. Trying to get on a good end on a good note as he will get you with T Mills best bets. And if the Astros are a part of this, you better get in soon, folks. And we'll get that in for you. You better get in soon because they start at 6:10. So make sure you're listening for that. But Los Correa, the man of the hour, spoke to the media for the first time as he rejoins the Astros. This was Los talking about his experience getting back here with Houston.
What's been the reception in there amongst the guys? Has this been a lot of fun just seeing being amongst some of your former teammates again?
Yeah, it's been great. They treated me like I never left. So, you know, it feels good to be in this clubhouse again, and great guys and great players. I think front office and the coaching staff, they do a really good job at developing players and getting the right people here. And, you know, they just know how to win. It's only one mentality in this clubhouse, and that's to win all the way. And I think the way they do it is the right way.
All right, there is Los. As Tyler said earlier, sounds like he never left. Sounds like he never left, man. Hopefully he does something big tonight. I bet it will be just like him, fellas, to come up and have a big game, knowing everybody's eyes are on him. This is kind of one of them moments. I mean, it's not the postseason like we've seen him many times. Big swings, big home runs. God, boy, I hope he brings the time thing back. That done it for me.
That do it for you. You'd forget about them. You'd forget about them numbers so far this season, wouldn't you?
I've already forgot about them. I told you those numbers mean nothing to me. Hopefully, has a big night. But fellas, I do want to get your thoughts. 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. Before we get to T Mills' best bets, they're a better baseball team. Sanchez, Correa, and everybody they were able to get in. They're a better baseball team today. They're a better baseball team after they made the trades yesterday. But they tried to work hard, in particular, to get Dylan Cease from the Padres, who wanted Spencer Arrighetti. And Dana was like, nah. Hey, man, take this Jason Alexander cat, is probably what he was thinking. But they weren't able to get him. And so right now, they've got four healthy starters, it looks like, unless they go and bring somebody else from Sugar Land. But they've got Framber, Hunter Brown, who goes tonight, Colton Gordon, and Jason Alexander. Those are the four, with them having to trade Gusto away to bring in Jesus Sanchez. But we do know they have some guys waiting in the wings in Sugar Land that are trying to get healthy to get up there. Christian Javier, Spencer Arrigetti, both of them have pitched recently. Arrigetti threw 79 pitches. Christian Javier threw 64 pitches. So that has been in the last couple of days. Lance McCullers is still on the IL. Hopefully that blister is healing up for him. Luis Garcia is in Sugar Land.
Prayers up.
We're praying on it. Brandon Walter had the left elbow inflammation. Hopefully that's not serious. JP France, all of those guys have the potential to come back here and help this team. But, Clint, it's clear they felt like they really wanted to get Dylan Cease. They just reached a point where they couldn't go any further, but they were trying to get him. What's your thoughts about now what the rotation will look like the rest of the way, and more importantly, what it will look like when they get in the postseason?
Well, I mean, I have no idea, but you're betting on a handful of guys, and you're betting on one of those guys coming back and being absolute nails. I mean, whether that's Lance McCullers from his little blister, Christian Javier, or it's Spencer Arrigetti from playing long toss in left field when the opposing team is in taking BP. Like one of those guys, does Spencer Arrigetti come back and prove that he has taken it, and does he have time to do it in 50 games? Can he take that next step and show that he's the guy that you can trust, or the best option in that third spot in the rotation? Can Lance McCullers come back and be more of the good that we've seen from Lance and less of the bad that we've seen from Lance? Can Christian Javier come in here and show that he's as good as he was before the injury, when they gave him the extension? Which one of those guys, and you only need one of them to step up sooner rather than later and take a stronghold on that third starter in the rotation. I would rather have them gone out and got for sure, but right now this is what you're left with, and it's a handful of guys. It's not a bad situation. It's not as good as for sure, but it's not a bad situation to be in. You've got plenty of arms coming up that are more than capable to fill that third starter in the rotation role, and the fourth and the fifth, and you got plenty of arms that are more than capable. The question is can they stay healthy and can they return to form? We'll see.
Yeah. I do trust that at least two of these guys are going to come through and give you solid performances. At the very least, right? And to be honest, when you have Hunter and Framber at the top, I mean, you don't need vintage Christian Javier. You take it. You'd love it. You don't need it. You don't need the best of Lance McCullers when he in the World Series run where they lost to the Braves was your ace and one of the best pitchers in the American League. You don't need that. But you need guys that just ain't gonna get blown up. Guys that give you a chance. And as you said, with a guy like Lance, he'll might have a special night. We've seen him strike out 12 before this year. We've seen him have big swing and miss games. There you go. And I do trust that a couple of these guys, I mean, like you said, it's not a terrible position. You got, what, Javier, Arrigetti, McCullers, Garcia, Walter, JP France. I mean, that's six guys. I believe two of those guys will come and help you. At least two of them. So that is the pitching rotation. That's the part they will have to look at. We'll see who's going to be the fifth starter before one of these guys that we just named comes back into the rotation, because right now they're just sitting there with four. All right, Tyler.
Boys, am I missing something that the Texans signed Marlon Davidson? Did I just see that?
Who?
The Marlon Davidson. I mean, it's not going to be a stop traffic type deal, but I remember him when he was at Auburn. He's been in the league for a couple of years, but when he was at Auburn, he absolutely wrecked shop.
Yeah, they made that official about 30 minutes ago.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, just bringing in another defensive tackle.
Defensive tackle. Oh,
He looks like he most recently played for the Titans, maybe? But he was a bad dude in college, man.
In college,
Ooh-wee. Yeah. It looks like he's been out. I guess he's been out of the league last year. Not a stop traffic move. Just saw it. Remember the name, boy. I enjoyed watching that dude play in college. Don't want to stop the best bets. My bad, T.
Yeah, what will be stop traffic when Tyler lets you all win a little money. Give us your best bets here, baby. End the week. Come on now. You need to be in the green to end this thing. to end this week right. Come on now.
I know it, man. It has been a while. It's been a... What's that?
So much pressure.
Yeah, ton, for sure. Been at least 2 weeks. I want to say probably three since we've had a green week. For the week, we were in that profit region we want to be in each and every week. So, we got to hit at least four. I got five best bets for you. If we hit at least four or we go a perfect 5 for 5, we will have a green week. So, here they are. Brewers. First off, the Brewers money line in Washington, D.C., taking on the Nationals. I got it at minus 145. Next bet is a money line that is also set at minus 145 tonight. That is for the Phillies taking on the Tigers in Philadelphia. And these last three, well, just because I'm in such a damn good mood and I love you, Houston, and Carlos Correa is back and I'm feeling kind of horny, three Astros bets to round off for you. Let's go, baby. My God, I'm feeling it coming back. Stroh's money line, lock it in, minus 120 up against the Boston Red Sox tonight. Hunter Brown's on the mound. I have him over 6.5 strikeouts versus those Red Sox. And then lastly, a player prop for you for the opposition. He's a Red Sox. He plays for Boston. Pretty good with the bat at times. Alex Bregman. Under 1.5 total bases for that guy up in Beantown. Whoever the hell this Breggy Bomb fella is. Under 1.5 for him. Those are your five best bets.
Mean salsa. Makes a mean salsa. All right. I like the money line bet. I like the money line bet with the Phillies and the Tigers. As Clint will let you know, I'd say the Tigers have been leaking oil here in the second half, big time. So I like that bet as well.
I didn't know Bengals had oil in them.
Yep, yeah, they're leaking it. They're leaking oil.
I think I like it on Hunter Brown over 6.5.
Would you like the Benjamin that I owe you placed on that?
Sure, that sounds good. Man, let's do that.
I got you, bro.
That's a good way of doing it.
I do owe you 100, right?
Well, you owed me 200. Depends on whether you put that last one
I did.
Or not.
Yeah, that was the only one that didn't hit that day. My bad, bro.
And by the way, Tyler, me and you are all squared up.
As we are every day, because you are a bit cheap.
Great job today, Clint. Great job today, Tyler. Let's see if Los has a big weekend, baby. Make us...
you said that funny.
Make us have a good Monday with Los going off and getting the crowd real excited here in Houston. I am Ron, the show as always, Houston. We love you, baby. I feel better. You left early the last time we went. All right.
That's one way to phrase it.
It is.
Go ahead and do your tease here, buddy. Not really early because it went longer than games do.
Yeah.
Hey, tease, bud. Here we go.
You left before it ended. And
Ron.
We're all disappointed.
Ron.
He spoke about.
Freaking lame ass.
Nick Cayley, he spoke about.
Hold on, Ronnie.
First off, you limey bastard.
Then I look at you. And the world
have a good weekend, good golf, good tennis, or whatever makes you happy.